You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Next up, the health of our kids. You know, we all have kids. When we have them, we hope and we expect that our kids are going to grow up, live longer, healthier lives than we do, right? But a new study this week warns that the future may not be so rosy for our kids. They may actually live shorter, less healthy lives on average due to an epidemic sweeping through that population. Of course, that epidemic I'm talking about is obesity. Over the past 20 years, rates of obesity among children and teens have risen dramatically. And today, more than 1 in 10 American teenagers are obese, a condition which puts them at a higher risk for a host of diseases, especially type 2 diabetes and heart disease. And according to the current study out in the New England Journal of Medicine, this rise in childhood obesity could actually shorten life expectancy in the U.S., later this century, somewhere like 50 years down the road, reversing gains of more than 200 years and actually possibly creating more deaths from obesity than from heart disease and cancer. So we're going to talk about two of this study's authors. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, if you'd like to talk about obesity and perhaps with your own kids, give us a call. Let me introduce my guest. Jay Olshansky is a professor of epidemiology and biostatistics at the School of Public Health at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He's on the phone from Brisbane, Australia, though, where he's going to be presenting this paper on Monday at an international conference on healthy aging and longevity. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. David Ludwig is the director of the obesity program at Children's Hospital in Boston and an associate professor of pediatrics at Harvard Med School. Welcome to the program, Dr. Ludwig.
Nice to speak with you.
Dr. Olshansky, this is really quite an amazing conclusion. 200 years of rising life expectancy is going to start to reverse because of obesity?
Well, I sure hope we're wrong, but the evidence certainly points in that direction. I mean, what we did was we estimated the current effect of obesity on life expectancy for the U.S. population today and found it to be roughly 4 to 9 months. That's not quite trivial. It's roughly equivalent to the negative effect of all accidental mortality. The kicker is that we looked into the future by looking at our children. And by doing so, what we found was the rather dramatic increases in obesity among our children, which has yet to be expressed in mortality, will do so within the next 50 years. And when it does so, it's going to lead to significantly higher mortality and the declines in life expectancy that we talked about in the manuscript.
How much a shortening of an average life would that be over that time?
Well, as I said, we're currently at 4 to 9 months, which is not trivial. We think it could rise to anywhere to 2 to 5 years.
Wow.
Over that time period. Now, to give you some perspective, the hypothetical elimination of cancer would yield about a 3.5-year increase in life expectancy. So this would actually exceed the negative effect of cancer if indeed it were to occur.
And the article, Dr. Ludwig, seems quite pessimistic about our ability to reverse this.
Well, as Jay points out, we hope that our predictions are wrong, but unfortunately, at present, despite a lot of national attention to the problem, we lack anything resembling a clear national vision for addressing the obesity epidemic in general and childhood obesity in particular. A couple of examples, you know, we still condone a multi-billion-dollar food industry advertising campaign aimed at getting very young children to eat the most unhealthful foods imaginable.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, underfunded school districts have to encourage the sales of soft drinks in vending machines or fast food in cafeterias while cutting back on physical education classes in order to close budget gaps.
And there are other countries that are tackling this, are they not?
Well, absolutely. I think in Europe, some of the efforts are much more comprehensive. For example, the right to advertise products that are potentially unhealthful to children is not commonly recognized in Europe, Sweden in particular. Nor, for that matter, is it inherently a First Amendment issue in the United States. We, as one of the first public health actions to limit the adverse effects of tobacco on children, was a ban on the advertisement of tobacco products to children. But we think that it's very unlikely that some new drug, surgical procedure, or technology will compensate for the lack of a broad-based, comprehensive policy to change the environment on every level. Mm-hmm. And unless we see those changes, we are somewhat pessimistic with regard to life expectancy prospects.
Well, actually, let me
sure.
add to that, because I would acknowledge that we are very optimistic at one level, and we agreed with the editorial that accompanied the article that there are going to be continued reductions in death rates at older ages. Biomedical technology will continue to extend life. We have no doubt about that, but those gains are likely to be at older ages. And it's important to remember, when you reduce death rates at older ages, it creates small incremental increases in life expectancy. When you increase mortality at younger ages, it has a rather dramatic and immediate negative effect on life expectancy. We've seen it with HIV/AIDS and the 1918 influenza pandemic.
And perhaps to emphasize this point with regard to childhood obesity, we're really living in the quiet before the storm. Over the last, to understand this, imagine what would happen if suddenly a large number of children became chain smokers. For a period of time, maybe you'd see a lot of kids with smokers' coughs, but there'd be little direct impact on public health. It would take years or decades for that exposure to translate into emphysema, lung cancer, or heart disease, and an additional period of time for those diseases to result in increased mortality. Very much the same situation with childhood obesity. Over this first phase in the last decade or two, we've seen dramatic increases in obesity at younger and younger ages, but little obvious impact on public health. Right now, we're beginning to enter the second phase, where that accumulated stress on young children from being heavy from such an early age is producing complications such as type 2 diabetes, which is now at epidemic proportions in adolescents. But it will be a period of time in the future before type 2 diabetes and obesity itself result in the prospect of heart attack, stroke, or kidney failure occurring not in old age, but in early middle age or even in young adulthood.
And that's going to tax our healthcare system.
Well, it risks overwhelming our healthcare system, both Medicare, Medicaid, and possibly the financial solvency of the entire healthcare system.
So this is really the tip of the iceberg, is what you're saying.
I mean, the metaphor could be made to a massive tsunami heading to the United States. You don't want to wait until you see the waters rising from the shoreline in order to take action.
There was a little note in the paper that about the president's warnings about Social Security going bankrupt, that he need not worry or warn us about this because all these kids dying from obesity-related diseases will solve that impending scenario, because they're never going to get to be 65.
Well, this isn't the way we want to fix Social Security, is it? But it is a bit simplistic to suggest that this is going to fix Social Security. I think what we're suggesting is the current forecasts of life expectancy made for the United States, we think, are overestimated. They're anticipating a higher rise in life expectancy than we are. I think they don't take into account this anticipated effect of obesity. And we provide a perfect example in the manuscript itself with regard to diabetes. I mean, we've seen a steady increase in the risk of in the prevalence of diabetes and death rates from diabetes in the last 20 years. And the Social Security Administration has forecasted in their latest estimate that it's going to begin declining in the year 2010 and decline every year for the rest of this century. And that flies directly in the face of the evidence of what we have in front of us about childhood obesity today. So it just didn't make sense to us.
In fact, a child born today, because of the obesity epidemic in the United States, has a lifetime risk of developing type 2 diabetes of 30 to 40%. That approaches 50% among some minority populations. I mean, this is an unprecedented public health development.
That's astounding.
It truly is.
Is there anything we can compare that to? So we get an idea of the magnitude of how many people will be walking around. You know, what affects 40% of the people now that we say, oh, yeah, it's comparable to that? That's even higher than smoking, is it not?
Well, it's not just the magnitude, but the time in life when this is occurring. It's one thing for an adult 45 years old to be gaining an extra few pounds a year and then develop type 2 diabetes at age 55 and then have to suffer, you know, these life-threatening complications at age 65. That's bad enough. But for the clock to start ticking in a 4 to 6 year old who is overweight or obese, depending upon the terminology, to then get type 2 diabetes at age 14 to 16 and then face these life-threatening complications before a 30th birthday, this is an unprecedented public health situation.
And I don't think there's a checkoff box on your health insurance for treating obesity in most places, is there?
Well, we at Children's Hospital Boston, we have a childhood obesity treatment program that's focused on children in a family context. But we have a 6-month waiting list and, unfortunately, very limited funding, in part because many insurance companies don't recognize obesity to be a legitimate disease. Some of our patients' families have coverage up to 3 visits and then cut off. Others have no coverage at all. The savings here, or the savings to school districts by promoting the money that might be made by promoting the sales of fast food or soft drinks to their students, these savings or profits pale in comparison to the long-term cost to society by not dealing with the obesity epidemic in a comprehensive fashion.
You know, if indeed there is no intervention, if we fail in this effort, what you're going to see in the next couple of decades is significantly elevated obesity-induced mortality among these kids in their 20s and 30s. You're going to get fewer people paying into Social Security. You're going to see a significantly elevated set of healthcare costs among people in this middle age range, and fewer people drawing benefits from Social Security. Fewer people making it beyond the age of 65. So it will have a cascading effect throughout the age structure in the next 50 years. It certainly is a fixable problem, but it's not like we haven't known how to fix it for a while, but during the time we've known how to fix it, it's only grown worse.
Tell us about how you fix it.
Well, there's been the classic debate, is this a question of personal responsibility or not? That's a favorite argument of the food industry. But I think that, like any public health crisis, it shouldn't be personal responsibility versus social responsibility. It should clearly be both. It is up to parents to oversee the nutritional quality, to oversee their children's diets, and to encourage an active lifestyle. But when those efforts are undermined, especially for busy single parents today, by thousands of food commercials directed at kids or school districts that are serving extraordinarily unhealthful foods, or a lack of opportunity to find safe recreational options after school, or the lack of prevention and treatment programs, personal responsibility is undermined, and we really lack what I think could be called a systematic and comprehensive treatment approach. So we really need both.
Talking with David Ludwig and Jay Olshansky this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Well, you're talking about a real national program of getting serious about this. And the word leadership comes up. And where is leadership in this age that we live in? Gentlemen.
Well,
see, there's the quiet before the storm.
Well, I mean, this is a good question, but leadership, comes at various levels. I mean,
let me flesh it out a little bit more. I mean, you're talking about attacking a giant food industry, campaign dollars, all that kind of stuff.
There are efforts popping up sporadically throughout the country, both on the local level and also including, for example, Senator Harkin's bill just announced this week. At a press conference to restrict the advertisements of food products to young children. This could be viewed perhaps as the initial stages of the public health campaign against tobacco-related illness, perhaps in the late 50s or early 60s. But do we really need to wait another decade or 2 decades before this vision unites in a comprehensive approach at every level of society, from government to schools, communities, and certainly within the family?
Josh, yes. Let me just get a call in before we have to go. Josh in Oakland, California. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to hear the thrust of this conversation, especially referencing Senator Harkin's bill. I work on these issues in Oakland. I just wanted to ask whether or not the authors might be able to comment on the impact of racial disparities. I read their paper in the New England Journal, and it seems like their analysis is on the impact of reduction in life expectancy for the general population, And since rates of obesity are so much higher among, for example, black women and Hispanic and black children, what the implications are for those populations specifically down the road.
That's a very good question, and you're right on target, of course. The most dramatic increases in childhood obesity have been observed among blacks and Hispanics in the U.S., and I think we state quite explicitly in the manuscript that the first declines in life expectancy that we think we're going to observe in the U.S. will be among blacks and Hispanics in the next few decades.
Hmm.
And I wonder, just talking about solutions and leaders, what your opinion on something, I mean, I work indirectly for the food stamp program, and I've often thought a really great politically viable solution to this problem might be to increase benefits if used to purchase things like fruits and vegetables and whole grains, perhaps doubling or tripling the value of food stamp benefits in the marketplace. And that's kind of an indirect agricultural subsidy, but it would reorient in some ways our agricultural policy.
You know, it's an interesting idea. One criticism of these ideas is that it interferes with the free market economy in America. But we actually really don't have anything resembling a free market economy when it comes to the food supply. We spend billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars over the decade in farm subsidies for crops which really have some of the lowest nutritional quality imaginable. I think the number one crop is corn being subsidized, which makes a cheap product such as high fructose corn syrup used for soft drinks and now being added throughout the food supply, makes a cheap crop even cheaper. And fruits and vegetables, which are inherently more expensive, comparatively even more expensive.
Well, I guess we're going to have to – this is just a fascinating study, and I want to thank you both, gentlemen, for taking time to talk with us about it, and we'll be following it.
So, pleasure.
Thank you much.
Thanks for coming on. David Ludwig, Director of the Obesity Program at Children's Hospital of Boston, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Harvard Med School. Jay Olshansky, Professor of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at the School of Public Health, the University of Illinois in Chicago. Thanks for staying up and coming on the program.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break and come back, switch gears, and take a – fly us to Mars. Some really interesting new data about the seismology, the volcanism, the ice and water that's being discovered on Mars is fantastic. The news changes almost by the minute. Stay with us. We'll be back with the latest update on it. So stay with us.